This is the Inno the Buzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Welcome to episode number 67 of the Inno the Buzz podcast, the podcast designed to help smart businesses with an interest in innovation become even more innovative. In this episode, my guest is Alistair Michener of Drawboard. Drawboard has developed an app and a SaaS, that's a software as a service product, that allow annotation and mock-up of digital drawings in PDF form. And their company has had massive growth over the past 12 months, partly because of a partnership they've established with Microsoft, which has resulted in the Drawboard app becoming pre-installed on various Microsoft Surface devices. Alistair and I talked about the challenges of a rapidly growing startup and also the secret to understanding your customer needs and providing an awesome user experience. I'm sure you'll enjoy hearing the story of Drawboard directly from Alistair. So without further ado, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Alistair Michener. Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to have with me today on this episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from Melbourne, Australia, just up the road from me again, Alistair Michener, who's the founder and the CEO of Drawboard. Now, Drawboard has developed a couple of apps that allow annotation and markup of digital drawings in PDF form, and really interesting apps, and they've had massive growth over the last few years. So I'm really interested to find out more about that. One of the really fascinating things is Drawboard PDF, one of their apps, now comes pre-installed on various Microsoft Surface devices. Now, Sharon Taylor of Omni Studio suggests I interview Alex, so a big hello to Sharon and thank you. So I'm really looking forward to learning more. So welcome to the podcast, Alistair. It's a great privilege to have you here.
Thanks, Jürgen. It's a pleasure to be here too. Thanks for having me.
Now, of course, Alistair also is a fellow alumni of Monash University and a chemical engineer by training, so we've got quite a bit in common.
There we go. We end up in interesting places, don't we?
That's right, yeah. All right, so before we start talking about Drawboard and digital drawings and innovation and small companies growing rapidly, let's find out a little bit more about your background. So I've mentioned that you're a Monash alumni and a chemical engineer. So what were some of the key milestones on your journey to founding Drawboard?
Mine is a pretty short journey. I didn't really work that long in the corporate life. So as you said, I studied chemical engineering, also did a master's in finance and in commerce, so a double degree. And I worked in a few places before I started Drawboard. And what motivated Drawboard was working at a large engineering company by the name of Worley Parsons. And we were working on a large detailed design project with just an enormous amount of drawings and supplementary documentation that was printed off, and we had to mark them up all the time. But I also experienced this in many other places as well. So when I was working in some management consulting places and another engineering business that I was in, so it was just the common theme that people like to mark up and annotate using pen and paper and then scanning it in. So the document workflow was broken in many places. Mm. So it's a really basic problem that we're solving that's enabled by some of the great technology that's available at the moment to build on. So there's some of the key milestones, if you want to phrase it that way, for starting the business.
Yeah. And when you were doing your degree, did you envisage you'd go down this sort of track, the entrepreneurial track, and come up with something that turns into a pretty significant business?
No, not at all. I wouldn't call myself at that time an entrepreneur or a founder. I actually had no idea what a startup was. If you told me the term startup during uni, I probably would look at you pretty blankly. I would not know what that is. And I was pretty much coasting through uni. You know, I was doing well, but I was looking forward to a full career as being as an engineer. And this really came from left field.
Hmm. Hmm. So how did it come about? I mean, I love the fact that, you know, you didn't overcomplicate anything here. You discovered a need and you thought, you know, we can solve this need by doing something innovative with technology?
Well, it's actually funny that you bring up Monash, because this makes me now remember how I came up with the idea. I was sitting in a lecture for, I think it was thermodynamics or transport phenomena, and my lecturer, his name's Ravi, and he's a great guy. He was delivering his lecture through another PDF program with a tablet and a stylus, using Windows 7 and old hardware at the time. And they're actually a competitor of ours now, the software that he was using. But he was delivering it with really great accuracy through the stylus onto a projector.
Okay.
And I was working at the engineering company at the time as an undergrad. And I was just, I joined the dots and thought, well, you know, why aren't we doing this in the business that I'm working at the moment? It would make our markup systems and processes so much easier. And I told all the engineers about it, and then we started playing the, you know what would be great if we could do this, if we could do that. And then, and then I said, well, why isn't anyone doing this? And then that's kind of where the motivation to start the company came from.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I love that. I love a lot about that, because I think a lot of people have good ideas and get to that point where they say, well, why don't we do it this way? And okay, that sounds like a great idea. What if we added this, and what if we changed that? That would be even better. But that's where it kind of ends up. It doesn't, you know, so what you did was actually take some pretty big action to get started and actually do something. So how did that look like? How did that journey look like from, you know, taking that idea then and actually putting it into practice and building a company around that?
So as you said, it's a pretty big jump from going from an idea to actually acting on it. And I found that that was pretty, there were a lot of barriers to doing it. And some of them were psychological and just social norms, because actually doing something like that, it was kind of embarrassing to tell people, oh, look, I'm going to try and start a business and solve this problem, because it is a big problem and hasn't been done before. And in the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, there's got to be a reason, you know, why hasn't anyone done it before? I'm missing something. So why should I tell people that I'm trying to do it? But I think I remember back to the days when I was talking to the people on my team and saying, hey, you know, is everyone going to be using this sort of software and these sort of hardware in the future for the work that we do? And they say, yeah, eventually one day. And I said, well, you know, what about in 1 year's time? And they said, no, I don't think that the industry is that progressive. And I said, what about 10 years time? And they said, yeah, of course, everyone's going to be doing it this way. So I said, well, what time between 1 year and 10 years is everyone going to be doing it? And no one could answer that. So I thought, well, someone's going to do it, and I'm kind of a good time of my life to do it as well. You know, I don't have strong commitments in terms of family, and you know, I'm not bound by a mortgage, so you know, it kind of timed up well with my life, and then I just took the plunge. I took the salary hit of not earning a salary, and I, you know, do the whole ramen sort of start a business style lifestyle for a little bit of time before it got underway.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. I love it. I was thinking there, I like the way you kind of challenge the norms of thinking there, in terms of, well, if it's going to be there in 10 years and it's not going to be there in 1 year, so when will it be there? And if it's, well, why not? If somebody's got to do it, why not me?
Yeah, definitely.
It's great, yeah. So what motivates you then in terms of, you know, this particular business? Why do you do what you do?
Do what I do because it's kind of liberating in a way to know that you're making a really big impact. It sounds really corny, but to know that you have your software that, I didn't write the code or anything, but to create the environment to produce the software that gets delivered to millions of people out there is really cool. And when you come across people, it doesn't matter where you are in the world, because we are pre-installed on the surface globally. I'm in the States a lot. I'm in Europe and Asia and other places, and you come across people that have used your app and they have really great things to say about it. You know, to influence someone's daily life like that, albeit at the productivity level rather than, something that they truly enjoy, but to influence someone's daily life like that is really cool. To say that you've made an impact like that is great. And I'm a bit of a greenie at heart as well, and knowing that we're doing our bit to stop paper production and cutting down forests is really cool to recognize in yourself as well.
Yeah. Well, particularly for something like engineering drawings, where, if you're working on big engineering drawings and you've got teams and everybody's adding their input and marking it up, first of all, around the use of paper, that definitely churns through a lot of paper if it's all being done on paper. And the second part, you mentioned productivity and process. It's very easy, I know, to lose track of which version you're actually working on and looking at, and things get lost as well. Yep. So, having it all digital, it's easy to do version control, I imagine, and it's also clear what everybody's looking at, the same document, essentially.
That's it. I was looking at some stats the other day around rework, and rework really comes from version control problems, and the stats are astounding. I think I read a stat that between 9 to 30% of total project costs in design and construction come from rework that originate from change related problems with documentation and drawings, and that translates into version control problems. And then looking at other stats around, if you have a set of blueprints or technical drawings, then the number of trees that go into producing that paper is enormous. So, you sell it to businesses on the case of, this is how much you can save or increase your productivity in a business. But then, from the environmental standpoint, it's a great saving as well.
Mm, yeah. That's definitely clear, and I'm a little surprised by those productivity numbers that they're actually that low. I would have expected they might be quite a bit higher, but
anyway. Yeah, they could be. It might have been a conservative guess.
Yeah. So you founded Drawboard in 2012, and you've had pretty significant growth, I would say. So tell us a little bit about some of the challenges that brought with us. Brought with it.
So idea stage was 2012, and then I worked on it in my part time and weekends and after work hours for about a year and a bit, and then it wasn't until about early 2014 that things started to get into full swing. So we went into an accelerator program called StartMate in Sydney, which was a really great learning platform, and so packed up our bags from Melbourne, went to Sydney for 3 months, and then we also went to San Francisco for a couple of months. It was hard in San Francisco, especially as a first-time entrepreneur from Australia with a Windows-based product at the time. Mm-hmm. And so that was a learning curve as well. We got nearly no traction in San Francisco. But the great thing about being over in the States at that point was that we met a fortuitous trip to Seattle and landed in the heart of Microsoft and started some conversations there where they could see where we were going with the product and we got some good assistance from them in terms of product direction and some marketing and store merchandising. So that started off our relationship with Microsoft in Seattle and we've been really growing consistently since mid 2014 when all that happened.
Mm. Yeah, I was going to ask about the partnership with Microsoft and how that came about. So,
I think it was going to happen anyway that we started the conversation with Microsoft, because I hope that I can be pretty safe in saying that we had one of the best apps on their platform. And their platform was one of the late bloomers in terms of the big technology giants with their Windows 8 and 8.1 and Windows 10 app ecosystem compared to iOS and Android. And so It wasn't a case of we wanted to be a big fish in a small pond at that time. It was more that I chose the software to match the hardware that could best solve the problem. And that was, you know, devices like the Surface with a digital pen.
Yeah.
And so we created a really great experience for that environment. And then Microsoft understood that we were solving a real problem that matched really well with their software and hardware. And then they tracked our story over time. And when they were doing pre-installs in 2015 for the Surface lineup, then they identified us and gave us a call and said, hey, well, look, we're doing some pre-installs. What are your thoughts on this? And then we went into some negotiation and before not too long, we signed on the dotted line and had our app pre-installed on three Surface device lineups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have been a big breakthrough.
Absolutely. It definitely put us on the map. So very thankful for that and really made our company in many ways. So yeah, it was a great milestone.
Mm. So you wrote a blog post about your 2016 and I think you called it a very transformative year at Drawboard. So did that come about in 2016 or was that before?
It's been evolving over time. Mentioned that 2016 was a transformative year because a lot of things happened in terms of the business. So internally and at the corporate level, you know, we brought on quite a few more staff. We changed office. We released Bullclip. We enhanced the product in many ways, the Drawboard PDF. And so it was a pretty big year, you know, for the business and also personally, you know, just working in the business and it was transformative as an entrepreneur. So 2016 will go down as a big year. I know that 2016 was a pretty amazing year in other respects globally as well, if not for some good reasons that will go down in history.
Yeah, well, we won't go there, but the exciting times, and I'm sure that there's much more ahead as well. In terms of, you know, the rapid growth that you have experienced, and I know you've brought on quite a number of new team members, and you talked about 2016 bringing on a lot more again. How do you go about that? How do you bring on new team members at the same time as you're growing rapidly and also trying to build a certain culture within your organization?
Good question. And I think the best way to answer that is that as an innovative company and a startup, you want to keep the team as small as possible for as long as possible without burdening the team at the same time and without stifling growth and product development. And the reason for that is fairly clear, I'd imagine, which is that you want to be nimble, you want to be able to make quick decisions as the decision makers and you know, myself and the product manager and some of the others in the business, we want to be able to do our work, do our best work with the most amount of hours in the day. And so if you have a team that's doubling every month or every 6 months, then that can really slow you down.
Mm.
So it's about trying to choose the right team members that come in. Everyone that we choose to join the team is, I guess, we mentioned it the other day, there's something special about them. So it makes our job a lot easier and makes the team more productive. And so it's about giving ownership and autonomy to the people that do come in and entrusting them that they can get their job done to a level that you probably, you know, didn't even expect. So the culture kind of stems from there. They say that culture comes from the leadership within the company. It comes from the founder and the CEO. And so I think that when you're not knee deep in growing the team and growing staff, then the culture will naturally come out because you're enjoying yourself and you're enjoying the successes and you can come to work with a smile each day. So I think the mantra of trying to keep the team as small as possible for as long as possible is the best way to grow a team and keep culture.
Mm. Yeah, that's good advice. So is the team all based in Melbourne, or are they distributed in various geographies?
No, it's largely in Melbourne. We have roughly about 13, 14 staff here in the Queen Street office. And then we have one remote QA tester in Romania. So it kind of works out that we do a lot of work during the day. And then when we finish up, then Roxana can do all the testing overnight. We pick it up in the morning.
Mm. Yeah, that's a great model. I've always been fascinated that not more people do that kind of model where, you know, you can take advantage of the geographies around the world, particularly for software development, and hand off through. You could do it in three time zones, you know, 8 or 10 yeah. hours apart, and have handoff and really accelerate the development of software or the improvement or that.
Yeah. There's pros and cons, absolutely.
Mm. All right. So in terms of your ongoing sales process, obviously having the software on various surface devices is kind of an automatic sales funnel. And I assume that you get a license fee for how many units you've got there or some model. But in terms of the other sales process, how do you drive that?
Yeah, so this is an area that we're looking to learn a lot more about. And as you pointed out at the start of this this podcast, we have two products. So Drawboard PDF is pre-installed on the Surface, only the Surface Pro 4, Surface Book, and Surface 3. And then outside of those devices, then we are available through the Windows Store. And we rely a lot on the App Store to get that exposure.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get a royalty on, I won't go into many specifics, but no, we don't get a royalty on the ones delivered through the Surface. So, you know, when we grow and progress as a company, we'd love to, you know, recruit a lot of those, you know, a bit more revenue through the app. So this is more of a growing and expanding phase for Drawboard PDF as a product.
Mm-hmm.
For Bullclip, it's a complete different story. So instead of being a once-off sale or a app type model that's delivered through the store, then Bullclip is more delivered through the web platform, and it's a subscription that allows you to use it on the web, Windows, and soon to be iOS, and then hopefully at a later date Android. And so we need to do a much more elaborate, or come up with a more elaborate sales and marketing system to attract new users. And we've identified a number of channels. You know, the great thing about delivering a SaaS-based product is that, you know, people can say that you're making money during your sleep, because people can buy it anytime, any place in the world. And so how do you maximize that? And that's through digital channels, it's through partnerships, it's through resellers, it's through you know, inbound, outbound, digital marketing, those sort of methods. So we're fine-tuning them at the moment. But as you mentioned before as well, we've got a great channel through Microsoft. If you can partner up with one of the big technology giants, and Microsoft is a fantastic, fantastic partner to work with if you've got the right alignment, and you know, that they want to sell their Surface, they want to sell their cloud platform, mm-hmm. Azure, which we're based on. And so we've lined up a lot of our technology with Microsoft. And so we've got a natural alignment with them that makes them want to sell our solution at the same time as their software and hardware. So I'd imagine that would be driving a lot of exposure and marketing sales through Microsoft for Bullclip.
Yeah. And also, you mentioned earlier that Microsoft were a little bit late to the party here in terms of mobile devices, perhaps, and the operating system for mobile devices. And I know now, you know, they're bringing out some really neat things to challenge the Android and the iOS operating systems and the whole kind of bigger framework. So that I'm guessing they're going to be pretty aggressive in their marketing.
I'd imagine so. Yeah, I think competition at the big technology giant level is fantastic, because
yeah,
you've got you know, quality of Apple products, then you've got the quantity of Android products, and then you've got the innovative devices and other solutions from Microsoft at the moment. And so if you look at the timeline of when, you know, Apple was probably first to market with a number of things, Google followed, and then they delivered, you know, en masse, and then Microsoft was late to the party. But then Microsoft has the, you know, they had the advantage of looking at what was already available and then and then being nimble in a way. I know that the Surface team in Microsoft is pretty nimble, and with Satya coming in, you know, able to make some great quick decisions. And so they came out with amazing devices, with the Surface Pro, coming out with the Pen and modifying their operating system to be kind of dual tablet and desktop mode, which some people like, some people don't. But then they came out with the Studio. You know, the Studio competes with the iMac, with the Pen and a swivel that turns it into a drafting table. And so Apple couldn't do those sort of things because they were first to market, and then they held that stance. Mm. So Microsoft was able to, you know, look at the competition at a later date and then come out with something that's great. So it's the innovation's dilemma. You know, you innovate quickly and really well, but then how do you keep innovating? And so
that's right. Yeah.
I think that's great competition between these big players that is good for the public.
Mm. Yeah, and Microsoft, I mean, I've seen some of their cloud technology stuff recently that they brought out and thought, well, that's really neat. And, you know, obviously they're doing, as you say, they're, you know, looking at what's already there and saying, well, how can we be different? You know, we're late to this particular party, but how can we get some leverage by bringing new value?
Yeah, that's right. Yep. And I think they're doing a great job.
Yeah. All right. So in terms of, you know, you mentioned the innovator's trap before. How does that impact on a small company like yours?
Not sure yet. We haven't approached it. I know that, you know, if we keep going on our trajectory and we achieve great success, then yeah, we'll have to look at how we navigate that. So I know some of the software vendors out there that are in our space, you know, they're suffering from the same problem, and it comes down to legacy as well in your software code base. So how do you make sure that you're lean of technical debt and that you've got versatility and flexibility in your product roadmap so that you can respond to different market pressures and new devices available? And so we're constantly talking about it at our company, but our main focus right now is achieving the success with our current products.
So what do you see as the challenges of, you know, you come up with a new idea, getting that to market, and how to price that, you know, something innovative that perhaps, I mean, this is pretty clear, I guess, for the target market as what the benefits are, but you know, it does require a little bit of a change of thinking. So how do you kind of break through that resistance, if you like, and price something that reflects its value?
It's a very tough question, and it's something that's faced with a lot of people. I was talking to someone last night about this, about how do you price a product that is new to market and doesn't really have any comparison with anyone, and, you know, came up with ways of landing on a price anywhere from finger in the air to talking to the customer and working out what the value is to them, to working out your own cost base and making sure that the unit costs and the volume that you sell in matches what your expenses are, and then adding a margin. But for a scalable product like ours, you know, 100 customers versus 100,000 customers, the unit price varies considerably. So how do you set a price and keep it consistent is really difficult. So for us, I think it was a matter of, you know, who is our demographic? Who is buying it? What kind of purchasing power do they have? And how valuable is it to them? And then do some price testing, and then eventually we'll land on a figure. So we're still through the price testing period at the moment. We know that what we sell is very affordable compared to the benefits that they have. So we're pretty confident that people will buy at any price level. It's just what's the optimum. So we're finding that out over the coming months.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and you know, you mentioned that Bullclip is a subscription service, so SaaS product using the Microsoft cloud infrastructure as well to store the data and the drawings.
That's correct, yep.
Mm. So the drawboard PDF, you actually store the drawings on your device, do you?
That's correct, yeah. So drawboard PDF is a standalone app. It doesn't communicate to the cloud.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So that's the difference. I was sort of wondering about that a little bit.
Yep. Many people do. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. But basically they do the same thing. Is that right?
Very similar. Yep. So drawboard PDF is designed for marking up and annotating as a powerful tool for anything local. And you can open up a PDF straight away, mark it up, save it straight away. And so it can be a very quick and hassle-free way of dealing with your PDF. It is designed for the design and construction industries as well. So we'll continue to evolve the product and come out with tools for that industry. Likewise, mm-hmm. Bullclip as well. Bullclip is a bit more of an involved team effort. So instead of being able to just double click on a file on your desktop and then opening it up, you need to import it into the project, because then it then resides in our doc management system. So Bullclip is like a doc management system that uses the great work that we put into drawboard PDF for the front end. And then whatever you do in Bullclip is synced with the rest of the team in real time. So you could have Bob in you know, the UK working on a drawing or a document, and then Mike in the US receiving that within less than a second, and then they can work on that together. And we'll include some chats communication into the app, or you can be on a conference call and you can describe what's going on at the same time. It's like you're looking at the same piece of paper, and then that's all stored in the back end in the doc management system, which is tagged with relevant relevant discipline and drawing of documents metadata, so that you can pull it up very easily and quickly, and then you can send that out to other people. And then whatever you do on Windows is available on the web, which is available on iOS, so it's all cross-platform.
That's fascinating. Really efficient kind of team tool there.
Yeah, solving a lot of the team communication and markup problems with PDF drawings and PDF documents.
Mm. That's great. So what did people do before this sort of thing was around, when they were marking up paper? It was still fax, was it?
Yeah. Or
scan an email?
Well, you know people that still fax, and a lot of people do scan and either use email or a doc management system, which is a check-in, check-out methodology, which proliferates the version control problems.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. Yeah, I still see software from time to time where they have the check-in, check-out system running, and I think, I wish they'd get away from that.
Yeah, and hopefully they come to Bullclip.
Yeah. All right, so, well, what's the one thing that keeps you awake at night and kind of you worry about with this business?
One thing that keeps me awake at night, I think it's always an unknown what's going to happen in the next day or week or month. And running a startup is one of the most volatile things that you can do, because throwing curveballs every day. And you know, those curveballs can be absorbed at a big company, but a curveball is you know, a matter of life or death sometimes at this stage. So the unknowns that are around the corner, whether that's I don't know, like, you know, a big customer will fall through, or some macroeconomic event will happen that, you know, don't know how that's going to impact the company, or you know, always the threat of competitors and anything that's you know, team related. So they're the things that keep me up at night, just not knowing what's going to be around the corner.
Yeah. Well, there's lots of challenges that kind of, you know, outside of your control often as a startup. So that's always a bit of a worry.
That's it.
Mm. So it's, in terms, sorry.
Sorry. Oh, yeah. I was just going to say that you can only control the controllables. I learned that in cricket, and it's a motto that kind of stands true in many forms of life.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's definitely good advice, and often the sporting arena gives you kind of life lessons like that, doesn't it? So yeah, control what you can control, and let the other stuff happen.
That's it.
There's not a lot of value to be gained in worrying about something you can't influence.
Yep.
All right. So outside of, you know, the product development stuff and, you know, partnership with Microsoft, I guess you could call innovative as well. What are the most innovative things you've done in the business?
Most innovative things that we've done. I think, yeah, a lot of it comes down to the product level. Other than that, I think we're a pretty, you know, we try and do the things that have worked for other startups. We haven't been, sorry to say, we haven't been incredibly innovative within our own business, other than, you know, changing things up. If we know that certain dynamics aren't working within the business, then, or within the team, then we'll try and you know, shift it up every now and then. But you know, luckily, touch wood, everything's been running pretty smoothly, so we haven't had to mix up things too much at the moment. I think, you know, we worked from co-working spaces for some time. Actually, one thing that we did was move from one co-working space to another, and then to an accelerator program. So we're always changing it up in the early days, and it was good for a networking point of view and just getting different perspectives and you know, putting yourself in different situations arises, makes new opportunities come out of the woodwork. So that's one thing that we did do.
Yeah. Co-working spaces are actually great like that, aren't they? You get even with businesses that are in totally different markets and not related to what you're doing, that you know, you get interesting perspectives because the challenges are often very similar, and how people deal with the challenges or deal with situations is really valuable to share those.
Absolutely.
Now, I did have a discussion with Sharon on the podcast we published last week on the innovation, and one of her recommendations was, you know, stop trying to be innovative, you know, to be more innovative. And she pointed out that innovation can be just, you know, improving the things that you might consider small things but can make a huge difference, and keeping incrementally improving those. So that sounds like what you're doing on an ongoing basis, which is great. Yeah,
definitely. I think you just have to be open to it without forcing it.
That's good advice. Yeah. All right, Alistair, this has been really great. Really appreciate your sharing with us the innovations in the product and, you know, the challenges of the growing business. So I want to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. So it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions, and hopefully we'll get some really insightful answers that will inspire our audience to go and do something awesome.
Let's give it a shot.
Yeah. So the first question is, we've kind of alluded to it, is what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Yeah, being open. I know that I worked only in a short period in big corporates, but talking to my managers and you know, doing my one-on-ones with them, anytime that I brought up something that I thought, well, specifically to do with this idea, it got shut down straight away. And I think that's just because they didn't want more work and they were concentrating on their agenda. So I think being open and being creative and giving the idea a shot, just in a minute or 2 minutes of just being open in your own mind of what that could actually transpire to. It's pretty simple logic, but I didn't get it when I was working in a corporate.
Yeah, that's great advice. Yeah, I think you make a valid point there, that often people have a particular agenda and they sort of shut down their mind to new ideas, or, you know, that there could be value in actually doing something a little bit differently.
Yep.
So what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or develop these kind of products that are different?
I think more recently it's around having kind of what people would call the water cooler talks. So having those spontaneous times when you're talking to your team and once someone comes up with a good idea, making sure that they have the confidence to be able to follow that through in the conversation. And so having meetings, but not too many. You know, you're in a product development company, so people need their flow and work. And so having monthly one-on-ones with people and morning meetings or stand-ups and scheduled meetings around certain topics, and then being open to it in those ways. So what I'm getting at is being able to create a forum for spontaneous ideas to pop up.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. I love the idea of stand-up meetings to try and cut down on time and spend in meetings, because I guess, you know, you probably experience this as well in the corporate world. Meetings tend to kind of stifle everything. They drag on and people get bored and they're not doing anything productive. But, you know, as you say, the water cooler talks and actually interacting with people and sharing experiences is really important.
Yep, absolutely.
Mm. All right. So what's your favorite tool or system for improving your productivity and allowing you to kind of focus on the important things you're doing with Drawboard?
Good question. I can probably think of two things that are semi-related. In our meeting room, we have a bean bag, and that encourages people to be casual about the meetings and talk freely. Second one is, okay, so we have a couple of task management tools, one being Jira, and then we every now and then create Trello boards for certain processes, and Trello definitely helps the simplicity of things that you can manage your tasks a lot better. So and Trello is very great for team communication on a simple platform. So Trello helps us keep the productivity up within certain groups of the business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. I really enjoy Trello too. And Jira, I haven't really used Jira a lot. I've played with it and taken a look at it, but didn't mm-hmm. really see a fit for us. But yeah, so we'll link to those tools so that people can go and take a look at them. In terms of, yeah, so you mentioned processes. Do you document your processes within Trello as well?
What do you mean document the process?
Well, if you have like processes, your work processes that you use.
We don't have that many processes. In terms of, you know, sales and marketing, then yeah, we have some workflow in there and mm-hmm. process, but we don't document it through Trello. We usually keep that in some kind of shared Word or Excel spreadsheet online. So
okay, yeah,
Google Docs and Office 365 is great for those sort of things.
Mm, that's right. Yeah, I was just fascinated because I thought you might have a nifty way to do that in Trello.
Yeah, no, it could probably happen. I might look into it. Yeah,
yeah. All right. So what's the best way, you know, to keep a project on track?
Stand-ups. Yeah. And following the agile methodology. So, you know, we don't follow agile to the T. We make it work for ourselves, which I think that most businesses should. Having a daily check-in, so that, if you have five people in a project, then the stand-up is great for bringing up a blocker that someone else can jump in, because often people don't realize that it's related to someone else, or someone might say, you know, I have an idea for this or that. And it's a good way for keeping things on track, because then you can see what's falling behind, what's speeding ahead, and then you can manage around that.
Mm, yeah, love it. Great advice. And I love your comment around agile methodology, but not being really strict about it in terms of making it work for you, like adapting it to fit your own needs. And I think a lot of people get a little bit hung up on whatever it might be, whether it's agile or other methodologies, and say, well, you know, it doesn't work for us, and kind of try and follow it strictly, and I always wonder, well, why not modify it so that it does work for you if, you know, if there's value in the concept.
Yep, that's it.
All right, and what's the number one thing you think anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Oh, good question. Not sure. I think that as an Australian business, you have a bit of an advantage because you have to differentiate yourself when competing against US companies. And so whether that's through, you know, slick user interface or design or something like that. So, you know, as if you're talking about differentiating yourself as a company that looks different, then yeah, you just I don't know. I don't know how to describe it other than just being you know, brute force, finding a way into the market, just experimenting, you know, coming up with different ideas, talking to your business, your team members, and saying, hey, look, we're competing against XYZ. They do this. What can we do to navigate around them and eventually come up with some ways. So I can't give a specific answer other than just saying, use your strengths. So, you know, our strength is working with Microsoft, and you just got to identify them and then, you know, make chances and take chances, you know, put yourself in an uncomfortable, environment and make it work. So I had no relationship with Microsoft, but I just, I went to Seattle and put myself in the heat of the moment and you make things work for you.
Yeah. That's great. Great advice. I mean, you know, the idea of getting out of your comfort zone and pushing your boundaries and then figuring out, well, okay, now I've seen an opportunity. How do I make it work? Is really great. I like that. And also you're the first person who's kind of turned around, because I hear a lot of people talk about, you know, Australia is so far away and it presents a challenge in terms of, you know, the global stage and the global marketplace. You're the first person that's actually turned around and put that in a positive sense and said, well, we actually use that to our benefit.
Well, it's tough, but there's no denying it, but yeah. You know, you gotta use it to your strength. So yeah. People love Australians.
That's right. Actually, you get pretty good reception in general over in the US, hasn't
it? Oh, whenever you go over to the US, then things happen, because, you know, it's like people say, if you're down the road from somewhere, you never visit them. But if you're from out of town and you make a specific visit, then people will give you the time because you made the effort and they know that they're important enough that you're going to visit them.
Yeah, that's right. All right. So what's the future then for you and for Drawboard?
The future is very unknown, but no, we have some business and product roadmaps that are pretty cement. So, you know, it's about pushing both the products, Bullclip and Drawboard PDF. We're coming up with some other ideas for what else we can offer. And we really want to take on the design and construction industry and compete with some of the greats in that. And it's about really replacing pen and paper. I guess that's core to our mission. And as a company, the more pieces of paper that we can save, as cheesy as it sounds, is our goal. Because if we're doing that, then we're eliminating version control problems. We're eliminating rework and we're saving lots of cost for businesses and increasing productivity. So let's just save paper, I guess, is our future.
Yeah. And the Microsoft partnership obviously is critical to that. Do you see developments there happening that might impact on you in terms of, you know, new devices or platforms or something coming down the track?
Yeah, sure. I know that they're innovating a lot on the device level, and we're working on some projects with them and really excited for the partnership to continue. That said, you know, we're going to be delivering for iOS and hopefully Android in the future. We're just excited for any kind of hardware and software that can help us achieve our mission.
Mm. Okay. Well, thanks, Alistair. This has been really great. I really appreciate your time. So what would be the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field or a leader in innovation?
I guess confidence and going into the unknown with a big heart. So, you know, whether that's taking the leap of stepping outside of, you know, your comfort zone or your company or your team or whatever it is, just having a bit of belief in yourself. I didn't really think that I had a lot of belief in myself as I was going through the journey, but looking back now, I guess I must have at some point. So it's being excited about what you can achieve.
Mm. Yeah, that's great advice. So I think, you know, belief in yourself and belief in the ideas you have, and then, you know, obviously you've translated that into a team that also believes in the idea, and but you also believe in the team. So
that's the whole around you are the most important.
Yeah, the whole culture of that. So that's really great advice. So thanks for all this. It's really been fantastic, and you've been really open and sharing with us. So where can people reach out and thank you?
Yeah, thanks, Jürgen. They can reach out to the company through team@drawboard.com. If you think that you could use any of our products, definitely write in and we can start a conversation and even do a demo. Otherwise, you can get me on Twitter at my hashtag is, or my my handle is Al Michener. They're probably the two best places to reach us.
All right. And we'll link to those in the show notes of the episode. And we'll also link to the Drawboard website, as well as a couple of other things that I've found that might be interesting for people to read as background. But definitely the Drawboard website, where you can access the apps as well.
Excellent.
So finally then, who would you like me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast, and why?
I might dive in my high school mate who's got a cool little startup that's going well. It's called MedTasker. His name's Andrew Yap. So I will, he doesn't know about this yet, but I'll message after this.
Andrew Yap. So what was the app called?
He's got a company called MedTasker. He's revolutionizing some of the communications within hospitals. He's a doctor himself.
Oh, right. That sounds fascinating. All right, Andrew, so if you're listening to this, and you might be by the time we publish it, look out for an invitation from me to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Alistair Michener. So thanks again, Alistair, for sharing your insights with us on the InnovaBuzz podcast today. You've been really generous with your time. I've enjoyed this immensely. I've got to say it right. I've enjoyed it immensely. I've learned a lot as well. And going to go and have a look at the app and see whether there's a use for us. We don't do a lot with PDFs, but I'm sure some of our clients would. So I might start to point them in that direction. So I wish you all the best for the future of Drawboard and the Bullclip app and the partnership with Microsoft. And let's keep in touch.
Thanks, Jürgen. Really appreciate it.
Thanks. Well, I really enjoyed talking to Alistair and learning more about Drawboard. I hope you too got a lot out of this interview. It's amazing how focusing on the fundamentals, solving a real problem, and providing an awesome user experience can drive massive growth in your business. All the show notes for this episode will be at innovabiz.com.au/drawboard. That is DrawBoard, all lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.com.au/drawboard. We'll have all the show notes there, as well as the contact information for Alistair and links to the other software and various things that we spoke about. Alistair suggested I interview Andrew Yap, the co-founder and CEO of MedTasker, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So, Andrew, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from me to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Alistair Michener from Drawboard. I want to conclude with a thank you to my audience. I know that many of you are regular listeners, and I love you. I love your feedback you've provided, and I'm glad that this service is something that you really value. If you're a first-time listener and you like this podcast, then head on over to iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Casts, where you can subscribe so that you'll never miss a future episode. While you're there, if you really like it, we would love for you to leave us a review, because not only do reviews help us get found and help us reach a wider audience and bring these awesome interviews to a bigger audience, they also let us know how we're doing. So provide feedback and suggestions, and we'll see what we can do with your ideas. Now, if there's anything that you'd like us to cover or questions you want answered on future InnovaBuzz podcasts, then please send them to us. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, if you don't innovate, you stagnate. So think big, be adventurous, and keep innovating.